Hello, listeners. It is May 29th, 2018, 5:15 p.m. You are listening to The Pastor Spot, a radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. My name is Terry Tackett, and I will turn it over now to the host of the show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Terry. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm just glad to see the sunshine. It was a scorcher out there today, though. I was trying to dig up a few flower beds, and boy, the water just pours off you. The sweat just pours off you, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker. I'm the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. We're at 209 East Water Street. Our phone number is 740-494-2222. You can call in here tonight if you'd like to talk at any time about anything at 740-383-9944. We ask you to keep it light and pleasant if you are to call in. This is a family show. But glad to be here tonight. And like Terry mentioned, this is an outreach of Community Christian Fellowship. And we have different subjects we talk about, and you're free to call in at any time. It's an open line show. Tonight I want to talk about something that we could have talked about last week, being Memorial Day was coming up. But I thought I'd kind of wait until this week, see how Memorial Day went, and get some thoughts on Memorial Day. And you know, I want to talk a little bit about, what I want to talk a little bit about this evening is sacrifice and personal sacrifice. You know, a lot of people out there make personal sacrifices for other people, and they do it every day. And we're reminded at Memorial Day that to remember the soldiers that have lost their lives over the years for us and for our ideals and our beliefs and our freedoms and our liberty. And, you know, it goes all the way back. You go all the way back to the American Revolution and even skirmishes and different things that went on before they even got to this country. And if you look at the Revolution and all the people that lost their lives, and you know what's really sad about part of that is a lot of those people that lost their lives never ever got to see the Constitution of the United States or to see it ratified. And but they gladly gave their lives for what they believed was going to come down the road. And we owe a great deal of gratitude to those people. The sacrifices that were made by so many back then, and putting their necks on the line. Businessmen that that were successful businessmen, but for the sake of this new nation building, they came together and they were the founders of our country and put their necks and their families on the line in many cases. I often think of, and this goes all the way up through, you know, the Civil War. And I will imagine even after that, but the men that we were a farming nation for the most part, and the men that would walk off to the battlefield, leave mom and the kids at home and to plow in the field, and she had to try to take care of things, and not knowing if she'd ever see her spouse return again. And I think many times of the men that probably laid in a battlefield somewhere dying and thinking about their family and just praying that God be with them and help them to survive and stay on their feet. And, you know, we owe such a debt of gratitude to these people. But, you know, we always think of our most current things going on. But, you know, we had the Revolution. We had the War of 1812. We had the Civil War. We had the First World War, Second World War, Korea. Then we had both Gulf Wars. And in between, there were always places we were around the world where people lost their lives. And still today, men are fighting every day to preserve our freedoms. And I really wish that we would talk about it a little more often and think about it a little more often. Many times I feel that we take our freedom for granted. What do you think about that, Terry?
I think you're exactly right. That's a very good point. Yeah.
I kind of feel, I didn't serve in the military. When I got out of high school, real odd period of time in our recent history, you didn't have to sign up for selective service. There was about a two-year period where they had such a glut, should I say, of guys that were trying to get out of the service because Vietnam had just ended. and they were trying to get them out, and they had no room for anyone coming in. And they even suspended selective service, so I didn't get a draft card. But there's been times that I've regretted not going in, and I've always really appreciated the sacrifice that was made. You know, we all have relatives and friends and people that were there, and you hear the stories of the unbelievable sacrifice that they made each and every day. And I think of the war brides and the war wives and the moms and the people that just, and still even today, you know, we've got some friends that have people in the military, and I know that are just on pins and needles when they're gone. And, you know, you hear that there was, you know, four or five soldiers killed here or there, and immediately they're in panic till they find out, was that my son or was that my daughter? And that sacrifice that people made, we're finding that today less and less people are willing to make that sacrifice. And if we're going to preserve this nation, we really have to understand that we have to put others before ourselves. The only thing that has preserved this nation was the fact that we've always been a strong nation. But that's one area of sacrifice. We talk about that on Memorial Day. But let's look at a few others that are out there. And if anyone wants to chime in on this, they're more than welcome to. I see sometimes sacrifice today of people that work two jobs and able to take care of their families in order and able to provide what their families need. I look at sacrifice of teachers that stay up long hours preparing sometimes for their lesson the next day. And it seems to me that a lot of times, and I think this is where a lot of the anger and bitterness comes from in America at times, some of the people that sacrifice the most see the smallest return. And that's very, very disheartening for a lot of people. I don't know whether it's a failure to plan. You know, you find out that, you know, all of a sudden you're in a situation where you need to make a lot of money, and there's no, you don't have the education for a particular job. You don't have the skills for a particular job. So you end up working one shift at McDonald's and one shift at Burger King. And now, though, you know, between those two shifts, you're probably going to do okay, but you're going to be worn out. What time is there left for family? And there's where your sacrifice comes in. Sacrifice always means to give up something for something. That's what it means to sacrifice something. And we don't often, should I say that we're not, just don't seem as willing today to do those sacrifices, have that sacrificial life as we once were. I remember my father and the long hours that he worked and the hard hours that he worked. And most people can remember that with their parents. And I also remember as a young man and as a teen growing up, people lived in modest homes. Middle-class people lived in modest homes. When you saw a big home, it just blew your mind. And now everybody wants the big home. And
I was just thinking the other day, thinking on that, to touch on that same point that you're talking about. I was always, whenever I was younger, if I went to someone's house and they had two bathrooms, I thought, wow.
Wow, yeah, it was it. You were.
I'm in the big time. But now, of course, two bathrooms, you almost have to have two bathrooms now.
It's funny, in the when I was a kid in the 70s, I lived in a housing development in Hilliard. And there were about five housing developments built around Hilliard. They were all built by J.W. Galbraith. They came in on a truck, they poured a slab, and they threw these houses up. And all of them had three bedrooms, a kitchen slash little small dining area, a living room, and one bathroom. Well, the interesting thing about that was in the 70s, everybody had four or five kids. Everybody did. Well, they raised them in those houses. And everybody really felt they were living the American dream. I mean, you know, the parents had decent jobs. A lot of them worked at GM. They worked at different places, and they were happy with their little house, and they cut their grass and planted their flowers, and everybody was happy. And then something happened that changed all that, and those were considered practically the projects, you know? And it was like, you've got to be kidding me. It really was surprising to me. And now, you're talking about going full circle, now we got people wanting tiny homes. And I'll be honest with you, they make sense. If you really think of living space, go to another country and see what people live in. And I don't care where you go. Go to Europe. You know, everybody likes to look at Europe as being so romantic. My mother-in-law came here from South Wales, and her family were coal miners. And they lived in, we later called them in America, condominiums, and they sold for a lot of money. But over in there, they were just row of stone houses, apartment-type houses, slapped up against each other in a long row, and people lived in those. They've had them all over Europe for years. And that's what people lived in. But we do go full circle. And regardless of where we live or how we live, Terry, there's got to be some form of sacrifice. If we're going to have anything, we're taught that early on. In the Bible, when I think of sacrifices and faith, the one that always comes to my mind most was when Abraham, as you know, his wife Sarah was barren and she couldn't have children, and God had promised Abraham children and a great nation. And how are you going to do that when your wife can't have kids, right? And anyway, in her old age, Sarah did conceive, and she bore Isaac. Well, here Isaac's a young man, and God tells Abraham to go up on the mountain and sacrifice and build an altar for sacrifice and to take Isaac with him, and that Isaac would be the sacrifice. Well, first of all, God wasn't in the game of sacrificing human beings. But Abraham had such faith in God's promise that he knew he would provide a sacrifice, which he did. When he got there was a ram there that was caught in a thicket, and there was the sacrifice. To me, that was a great amount of faith. A story of faith in the Bible, that one, to me, goes beyond anything. Because when I look at you, there's no man in the world that is, well, I shouldn't say that, to be honest with you, because right now in different parts of our world, they are doing that. And they've continued to do those type of things, and but we don't. You know, Christian people don't do that. Americans don't do that. But to me, that was a great amount of sacrifice. And then for him to be even to consider that, and then with, of course, Christ coming and dying on the cross, that was the ultimate sacrifice for everyone's sin. And so when I think of sacrifice and sacrifices I might have to make, and I think of the great sacrifices, and there's been many, I think that it's very little what I'm called on to do. I think of my father-in-law, farm kid, I mean, grew up in just outside of New Rome in Columbus on the west side. Farm kid. Went to the service when he was, I think, 26, if I'm not mistaken. World War II. He'd never been off the farm. And here he is, you know, they're marched on to, you know, boats, and they're taken over, and they do the landing there at Normandy, going on under all that fire, and you're thinking, wow, what sacrifice. I know that he was in trenches over there in Europe for a long time, and even in North Africa, and he was in that whole region, and how difficult. I can't imagine the times he thought, you know, boy, I'd just love to be home in bed with mom and dad, you know, in my own bed at mom and dad's house. But yet, he willingly marched off to do that, because that's what we were called to do. And you think of so many of those guys that did, the young men too. I mean, he was older, but I mean, 18 years old. And I know of many young men that lied about their age just to go. And it happened a lot, and probably more than we know. And even during Korea, it happened. I have a cousin that passed away recently that had done that very thing. He wanted to go, so he fudged a few things and he went. And boy, the sacrifices they made to keep us a great nation. And I'm very proud of those people. I'm very proud of the fact that I shared in church Sunday, I said, you realize we're sitting here today, that we are free to worship because of those sacrifices all those people made. And that's why we have the freedom we do. And if we don't recognize it, we'll lose it. I mean, we will. We'll lose it. A lot of our freedoms are eroding. And we have to protect those freedoms and be willing to stand up for them. It's interesting. There's people out there that want to change parts of the Constitution. And I find that interesting because if you would just talk to anyone in general and say, what do you think about, you know, updating the Constitution? And they might, well, maybe it's about time we do that. It's an old document and blah, blah, blah. Well, next question I'd like you to ask them. Have you ever read the Constitution? Now, I don't know if they could look at you in a straight face and say yes, most of them. You know, you can pull it up online and read it. Read it and decide if you think it makes sense to you. The point is that document that was ratified well over 200 years ago now, that document made us the greatest nation in the world. And it would preserve us as the greatest nation in the world if we pay attention to it and realize, could you imagine some of those guys that were storming the beaches at Normandy or many of the other fronts they were on in the Pacific, all over the Pacific Theater? Could you imagine them knowing that at one point people would start thinking, wasn't really worth it. We need to change all this. It'd break their heart. It'd break their parents' heart to know what they fought for. You know, I think a lot of this started when we were in a bad war in Vietnam. Everybody knows it. It was a bad war. It was a war that was, we were misled in a lot of ways. Everybody was. But one thing that doesn't change about that war is those young men that went over there to fight for their country. And many of them were just as disillusioned by what they found out when they got there. And all they wanted to do was save their butts and get home as soon as they could because it was a messy, messy war. They were as much of patriots as anyone in any war. But yet they came home, and you know what it was like when you're old enough to know what it was like when they came home. They didn't come home to ticker tape parades. And a lot of them, because of it, ended up in a very, very bad way lived a horrible life and were supposed to be ashamed. You'd see a lot of guys wearing World War II jackets or a cap or something. You didn't see as many Vietnam, did you? And, you know, it's sad because those guys, they were in a miserable conditions over there, too. I've got many friends that were over there, and the jungle conditions and the heat and the bacteria and stuff, it was miserable. Plus, you didn't know who was friend or foe, and there were just, you know, they all have horror stories just like any other. War's ugly. Yeah. It truly is. But it has been what has preserved us as a great nation. And I think that we really, really need to recognize that and quit thinking. I don't know. I don't understand the movement that we need to change everything all the time. You know, it works. I had an interesting discussion the other day.
It's the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Don't fix it. You know, I had an interesting discussion the other day. You know, we're always being civil rights in this country has been a hot button issue. What happened with slavery has been a hot button issue. But there's some things that people don't always realize. And that is that, first of all, when the Constitution was ratified, there was a huge, huge opposition to slavery. They would not have had it ratified had they not kicked the can down the road. And they knew they needed to get the country off the ground, and they kicked the can down the road. However, do you realize that within 70 years, give or take, we abolished slavery in this country? something that had been a practice worldwide from the beginning of man. It took this country 70 years to abolish it. Now, granted, where there's still a lot of civil rights issues and a long way to go, there still are problems. But my point being that even though there's been a lot of bad out there, there's been a lot of good out there. In the Civil War, thousands and thousands of men marched off to war and lost their lives to abolish slavery. We need to celebrate those people. Do you know when the first Memorial Day, what the first Memorial Day was about? I read this a couple years ago. It was quite interesting. It was after one of the major battles in the Civil War. The war had ended at the end. And it was actually freed slaves that went out into the battlefields and found the bodies, what was left of them, of soldiers all over the battlefield, and came together and buried them and sang and prayed for their families because they were so grateful for the sacrifice that was made. Most people don't realize that. You know, there were great sacrifices made there. And as many and as evil as slavery was, and I'm telling you, you know it was just evil. I think slavery of any kind is evil. We got it going on right now with, you know, with the whole labor slavery and sex trade slavery and the stuff that's going on. To me, that is one of the worst and lowest crimes there could be. But it's like this, Terry. And we talk about sacrifice. We have to be willing to step up and sacrifice sometimes our own likability, sometimes our own image, sometimes our own what we have to make sure the right thing is done. And we're not always so willing to do that. And a lot of this stuff that goes on out there, society goes one way and people just go with it. You wonder, it's kind of interesting, and it's an argument that always comes up. Our church is part of the State Convention of Baptists in Ohio, which is part of the Southern Baptist Association in America. Now, when people hear Southern Baptist, immediately what comes to mind with a lot of people is a bunch of black-hating white people down south, right? All those Southern slave owners, they must have been Southern Baptists. Well, first of all, if you ever go to the South, you'll find out that an awful lot of the black churches are Southern Baptist churches. But what I'm getting at is this. There were an innumerable amount of people in churches that just didn't want anything to do with slavery. However, there were plenty that did. And you think to yourself, and I have to ask myself this question, how in the world could you call yourself a Christian and own slaves? Don't you think that's a good argument? I mean, it's a good one to think about. It's a good question. How could you do that? It's because when society begins to say something is the norm that is wrong, and it gets to be something that's commonly done, people soon rationalize why it's okay. You see what I mean? Let me give you a good example. How in the world did those people in Germany march all those people to the gas chambers? Because they had been conditioned to believe that Jews were substandard and nothing and garbage, or they could have never done it. But that conditioning happens over time. I mean, how could anybody do that to people? You see the pictures in Auschwitz and the other places, at Nuremberg, and you see those people standing there with no flesh left on their bones, children. How in the world could you do that? I just was recently looking at a picture of a mountain, literally, of shoes from dead people from there. How could you do that? It's you're gradually conditioned a little bit at a time. And it's happened throughout history in society. How in the world did people in so many religions around the world, clear back to the Greek culture, take their young children up and sacrifice them on altars? I mean, how do you do that? it's a conditioning, and it happens. And you want to, when I look at, I make no bones about the fact that I totally believe in the right to life. I am not a pro-choice person. I don't think the baby has any choice in pro-choice. they don't have any choice. And I totally believe that. However, the thing is, 75 years ago, people would have said, there's no way. But we're slowly conditioned to think something's okay, and then it becomes a norm. You see what I mean? And that happens in all of our societies, where things become norms that at one time where people say, oh, there's no way. One of the big things they used to talk a lot of was euthanasia. And that was basically, and a lot of times in other parts of the world and in Europe, you know, someone got old and they weren't productive in society anymore. There was nothing wrong with them taking their life or stopping medical treatment on them and letting them pass. Well, in America, we said, there's no way. That's horrible. You'd never do anything like that. That's murder. Guess what? Today, most of the medical field are sympathetic with that thought process because we're slowly conditioned to follow things. Now, do I think that tomorrow we're going to start killing people in this country? No, I don't think that. Could it happen? Understand, it has happened. You know, it's interesting how things are brought to the forefront and pushed back. The Irish slavery in this country was equally as brutal as the black slavery, but it's something that got pushed away and brushed away and not talked about. And it was the reason that it was as brutal as this, because the white Irish were not worth as much financially as the black Africans. The black Africans were a stronger people, and the white Irish were not, and so they weren't worth as much. And by being they're not worth as much, they were treated worse. Now, was it widespread and were there as many? Absolutely not. But it still went on. You know, there's always been atrocities that have gone on. Look what happened under Roosevelt in World War II with the Japanese that were put in camps and lost everything. Lost everything. They're rounded up because they were Japanese. And it was a big Japanese fear. And they went out and gathered all the Japanese America and they put them in camps. We don't talk about that very much, do we? All these things are wrong. They're horribly wrong. But it's because it comes out of things like fear, conditioning, all those things. People feeling they're being cheated. This is why when there's any time there's a particular hate group that hates particular people, you got to go in somehow and defuse that. We are not a nation of hating people. You know, I am a very... I believe the Word of God. I'm a Christian. I believe the Word of God. I get my ideals and beliefs from the Word of God. However, if you don't, you're my friend. You're not somebody that I'm going to want ill of. I wish you believed the way that I would, because that's what I believe would be best for you, not for me. What's it make a difference to me whether or not you believe the way I do? It doesn't benefit me personally one way or the other. But in my belief, what I believe is to be true is that if you want to live a life with God and have that life, you've got to believe what I believe. So I want for you to do that. Unlike in some areas where people are forced into a belief. You know, and one of the things that started the whole pilgrimage of the pilgrims that eventually ended up here was the fact they were forced to be Catholics. And they were forced into doing Catholicism or the Church of England. The Church of England. We all know that story, how that spun off. But anyway, we need to care about each other. And whatever sacrifices need to be made, we got to remember that we're all Americans and we all love each other. And hate groups come in all sizes and shapes. You know, there's a lot of hate groups that hate Christians. That's a hate group too, whether what people want to admit it or not. It truly is. And Christians see hatred all the time. And they see things spun against them in the news, the media, all kinds of things. And that's just simply not who Christians are. Now, someone might be out there and call themselves a Christian and be doing evil things. I don't believe that's the act of a Christian that does those kind of things. But it's just like somebody that can call themselves anything. It's kind of like that group we talked about that one day, those Westboro Baptists. You know, they're not Baptists. I mean, I don't know what they are. They managed to get a 501c3, and they go out there and they protest at all the funerals for soldiers and have all the hate signs and protest and shout out and call people stuff. And I don't know what they are, but they sure aren't in my, what I see as a believing Christian is, that's not what they do. You know, to me, they're just another hate group that called themselves something because maybe they wanted, you know, maybe they wanted to trash the Baptist name. I don't know. But they're certainly not Baptists. Not by the ideals and Baptists, the principles that I see, the statement of faith of Baptists. That's not what they do. But it's real easy for them to call that name out. And then you tell someone, yeah, I'm a Baptist. Oh, yeah, you're one of those guys, are you? And I think that happens with any group. I think that you can be far... I know people that are very, very far right, and they're the most loving people in the world. I know people that are very, very far left, and they're the most loving people in the world. My point is, whichever side of the coin you're on, you don't have to be full of hate. And you don't have to be vindictive, and you don't have to be nasty, and you don't have to be violent. Violence comes from every side. And I think we've got to get to the root of it, Terry. I think even with, gun issues are a pretty hot topic lately. But it wouldn't, if you take that issue off the table completely, the root problem we got to look at, why is there so much hatred? Why are young people doing this? And what's getting to them to this point of such a disrespect and disregard for human life? Because, all of us grew up as young people. You know, there's not as many rural people as there used to be. But all of us grew up with guns everywhere at our disposal, and nobody got shot. You know what I mean? It just didn't happen. And now it's happening a lot. And the guns aren't doing it, the people are. Now, you can make the argument they shouldn't have any way to get a hold of those guns, but maybe a fair argument there. What I'm saying is, I'm not talking about gun control on one side or the other, positive or negative. What I'm saying is that something is changing in our young people to make them want to destroy other life and themselves. I know personally that, and I'm sure anyone that can get on the internet can figure this out real quick, you could make a weapon to destroy a classroom in about 20 minutes from stuff you get at the hardware store. So if someone has that, is going to hurt someone, they're going to do it regardless. Should they be able to easily access guns to go do it? Absolutely not. You know, kids don't need to be accessing these guns. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, why in the world are they doing it in the first place? Why are they desiring to kill other young people? And what's bringing this on? There's a violent undercurrent in this country that's ugly. And it's not right and it's not left. It's something different. And I'm not sure what it is. I know there's contributing factors. I know that I've never seen a time when there's more violence at kids' disposal. You know, we grew up watching Westerns. That's about the only time you saw anyone shoot each other, was in a Western. But there's always a good guy and a bad guy. And the guy, either the good guy got shot and you're hoping he healed, or the bad guy got shot and he needed to get shot. A lot of times they even patched them up, you know. But you didn't see blood flying out of their head and their heads getting blown off and arms being ripped off. These kids can see this on a daily basis. on video games, on movies, and it really blows me away. One thing really gets me, Terry, is that Hollywood are the loudest voice for gun control, but so many of them make their money from violent movies using guns. Now, figure that one out. But what I'm getting at is, I don't know that that's the issue. I think a lot of it is. I think kids have somewhat been calloused a little bit when it comes to, they've been a little more hardened about those things because, or desensitized would be a better word maybe, because they've seen so much. They've seen so much violent, crazy stuff that we never saw growing up. And to them, it's not as, I'll give you an example. When I was growing up, when I became a pastor, I started doing funerals. And because of the fact that I've been around a lot of people in mourning, I've been around a lot of caskets, quite frankly, a lot of open ones. I've been, and being an EMT, I've been on a lot of deaths. I have great compassion for the families and feelings for the people and all that. That hasn't changed a bit, but the oddness of being around that has kind of gotten easier. It's the same type thing. You know, these kids, it may not be actually doing physical violence, but the realism of what they see is so real. The guns they shoot are so real. What the bullets do are so real on what they're doing that really does desensitize them. And I think that in most of the kids' cases that have done these things, they can always go back to they were kids that were just stuck on their games and their computer. And what are they seeing and what are they watching? And what's it doing to them in their head? I don't know that that's the answer, but somewhere, Terry, we've got to come out and say, we've got to figure out what's going on in these kids' heads. There's always been a standard of right and wrong, and a lot of that's going out the window. Our Judeo-Christian values, as country was founded on, are being pushed out of society. You know, God's not allowed in the school. People ask the question when these things happen, where was God? Well, you kicked him out of the school decades ago. I mean, kids are not learning truly why things are right and wrong, that there's an absolute standard. They're not learning of the love and the goodness that they learned when they learned from the Bible and in Sunday school class and in church. Actually, they're not learning the fear of doing anything wrong. Because one thing you do learn in church and in Sunday school is you learn that, you know, God doesn't like to play around there very long. You know, you do something wrong, there's consequences for it. You know, there's consequences for bad behavior. And I always grew up knowing that. And a lot of these kids today, the only consequences they can even think of being there is jail. If I go to jail. Well, a lot of these kids, I'll tell you what I didn't understand. I was watching last week on the news. I was watching them arrest one of these young people and taking them away a week or two ago. And I thought to myself, how can that young person be walking away with a smile on their face knowing they're going to spend the rest of their life in a jail cell with no freedoms? Now, you don't think we don't have some real head problems going on somewhere? Why would you do something that is going to incarcerate you for the rest of your life? What has made you so numb that you can do that? It isn't the fact that you can buy a gun easily, whether that's right or wrong. I'm not making that point. The point is, what is going on with our young people? What do you ever think about that? And why? What do you think?
I don't know.
It's a hard one because it just doesn't make any sense. And it's happening in more and more, with more and more frequency. And, I mean, like, the big talk is assault weapons. This last kid went in, he sawed off a shotgun and had a .38 pistol. And, you know, I mean, that was not an assault weapon. My point being, if you can't get one thing, you'll get another. You know, you can make a weapon, you know, that you can go into a school and do horrible damage with. So I don't know. I think people ask the question, well, if that's the case, why aren't they doing it? Why are they using guns? You want to know why? Because in all their video games, you go down in a blaze of glory with your weapon. You see what I mean? They're just reliving what they're seeing. And they may be kids that already have mental issues. They have a hard family at home. Maybe they're treated bad at school. Maybe they feel like a loner, a loser. I just talked to a lady yesterday that came up to me and said she was very concerned because her daughter was on the phone with someone that was talking about committing suicide at that moment. And this was a young teenager. Why do you want to take your life as a young teenager? You know, you got to wonder what's going on. You ever wonder that? I think that we have put God way too far away in our society. We've gotten rid of so much normalcy, Terry. Look what's happened to the American family. You know, I wish we had another hour. We're going to be out of time soon. But, you know, we don't sit around the table anymore. And moms work all you want to work. I know you have to work, and I'm sorry you do. And it's great for professional women, and women are just should be paid the same thing, and all those equality things should be there. But I'll tell you what, a lot of women have been forced into going to work that would love to raise their children, or at least one of them. The man could raise the children, the woman could go to work. But we've been forced into a two-income family, and kids have way too much time on their hands to do something without supervision. We're running around like a bunch of chickens with our heads cut off. And I think we need to just reel it back and look at what we've done to our society in the last 20 or 30 years. Why are kids feeling a need to kill themselves or other people? Why is there that need? What has happened to their self-worth? These kids appear to have no hope anymore. One thing that saved me from ever going down a road of wanting to do anything to myself, no matter what happened, was I always knew I had hope in tomorrow. Quite frankly, that's something that's taught very heavily in the church, and very few are going to church today. I mean, what's raising our kids? Computers, TVs? I don't know. Teachers are doing the best they can in schools, and trust me, they got their hands full. Because so many young people have just been, okay, school, raise them, and if they get in trouble, it's the school's fault. I don't know, but between this program and the next one, I got 2 minutes left. I want you to do me a favor. Now, I know you sit and listen to me. I want you to think about some of these things and give me a little bit of feedback on this. Some thoughts. What can we do to bring this around and have this problem not being so pervasive as it is today? Because it's a society problem. It's not a manufacturing problem. It truly is a society problem. You know, maybe in other cases, some manufacturing is to blame. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that we have a deep society sickness right now that we need to get out of. There's a lot of great kids out there. Please, parents, I'm not saying there's not, but we've got a real element in society that's very ill right now. And it's going to affect our future a lot. Hey, love you guys. Have a wonderful week. Please visit us at Community Christian Fellowship, 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our number is 740-494-2222, or you can visit us at prospectccf.com. Our services are at 10:30, 6:30 in the evening. We have 6:30 youth group and a midweek Bible study. You guys, be blessed.
And I want to just say one thing before we go, that with school being out, the teachers, everybody have a great summer.
Absolutely.
Bless kids. All the teachers and students, and hopefully a good return for everybody in the fall. And
if you need any help with your kids this summer or suggestions on what they can do, please call me at that number, 740-494-2222. I will call you back. God bless you.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.